Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back to another episode of Crypto Bros. I'm your host, Jason Madison. As always, joined by my co-host, Mike McGoy, Crypto Bay J, and Chris Epps. Welcome back, Chris.
Salam. Salam alaikum.
How you doing? Salam alaikum, my brother.
He's fully converted off of one trip.
Already converted. I'm looking for my first two wives of my harem. And then, we can see if we bring us from there.
Right.
I hope you got the money to back it up.
Yeah, I don't have the dowry yet. I'm working on that part, you know?
That dowry is light. You know, last time I heard, it's only like 2 or 3 ETH, actually.
And that's easy to get. It's easy to get 2 or 3 ETH if you know the right scammer. You have the right NFT.
Right.
Can we start the episode off by talking about how Chris was trying to scam our group chat?
Yeah, exactly. Not only are we welcoming Chris back from Morocco, we're welcoming him back in real life. He was scammed. He was trying to scam us.
He was
hacked. Now somebody hacked his profile while he was out in Morocco.
Great timing.
They were asking us all for some money. Luckily, none of us got it. It's a bear market, so there was no liquidity to be had.
Yep. Bad timing.
Yeah,
bad. Been drained already, so you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. Three arrows got the last of everybody's money. So, yeah. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back. I have a new breath of fresh air, ready to ride this market to
the bottom,
promised land. No. I saw many signs that we're going up over there, although we did like go through a little panic mode, huh, when I was gone. I saw that, you know, as soon as I got to Morocco, things started going downwards.
Yeah, the bull rally is over.
But I'm back, so we're good, bro.
Okay, all right.
That's just because I left.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Thankfully, I guess the market is back even now after taking a significant dump or being rejected, as the traders would say. ETH was rejected at 2000 or somewhere around that line. And I guess the stock market was just following Ethereum. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of signs that Ethereum was kind of making this move, or it was more influential on the crypto side, at least, I mean, that anticipation for ETH2 merge, which started, I guess, last night.
There's been so much news even today. Did you guys see the Caroline news in regards to FTX?
No.
What? Oh, come on, man. See, you guys are behind. Yeah. Caroline is going to be the new CEO of FTX, and they've already memed her out of existence. It's this young lady that looks extremely young, but she has some interesting takes. And yeah, since you guys aren't aware, I'll just let you do your research and we'll come back to that next week.
But no, tell us. That's something that sounds like important. So say, like, I'm looking for it right now because I think that's something that's
Tweet search Caroline and it'll come up. Caroline Capital is her.
Caroline Capital?
Yeah.
Well, that's her like Twitter.
Yeah. So this guy, Sam Trabuco, is stepping down as CEO of Alameda Research. And I guess they're closely connected to FTX. Alameda.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact hierarchy of Alameda and FTX, but I know that Sam Bankman-Fried is a owner of said company.
So he started Alameda Research with the funds that he gained from FTX.
Okay.
And so then Alameda Research, to my knowledge, is basically a hedge fund that has like 50 different projects underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically was just doing the same thing, you know, sprinkle $10 million here, sprinkle $10 million there, sprinkle $10 million there. Let's see what pops.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is, as we all know, with crypto, when one pops, that $10 million turns into $10 billion. So.
Yeah. So yeah, so Caroline is now the head of that fund.
Of Alameda or of FTX?
FTX.
Alameda.
Oh.
Alameda. Yeah. This guy, Sam Trabuco, was the CEO. Caroline Capital, at Caroline Capital, is now Alameda's CEO.
It's not something too crazy. I'm trying to figure out what this jitter thing is. But they're saying Sam.
But isn't it interesting how during, you know, as they say, when the tide washes in, you know, you can see who's naked. Like, isn't it interesting how all these people are losing their jobs in crypto in the middle of a crypto bear market?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how they happen, too. It's like not even like they're like choosing to step down, but it's from like just one little, you know, facet of their job or one thing, and they have like 15 other things going on. So that's like, you know, with Michael Saylor stepping down, literally he just stepped down and by choice, it's just bad timing. And it looks like he's about to just go full time Bitcoin instead of
working. Even Jack.
But hold on, I was told that actually that was more of a demotion for Michael Saylor, because he still has people he has to answer to, ultimately, yeah. Right? Like when you take someone else's money to then invest it, you have shareholders to answer to, and if they're not feeling what you're doing, then they're going to put pressure on you. You know, whether it be like directly or, you know, the corporate way to step down. And right. So ultimately, it's still a reflection of your performance, however you slice it.
Yeah,
And the part that's concerning for me is like, well, we know that market cycles come and go as with anything, mm-hmm. right? Real estate, right? Right now, stocks go up and down. Auto loans go up and down. All this shit goes up and down. But again, like to see all these CEOs or people quote unquote demoting themselves in the middle of the worst bear market we've seen in a very long time for crypto. It's just very interesting.
Well, I don't know if I would say worst for in a very long time. I think the reality is that we just came off one of the biggest bull markets in a very long time. And people thought that it was going to continue on. And I think, people were invested in that notion, and a lot of people got rich. I think this guy may have been somebody who got rich and who may have not really cared that much about.
I don't even think it's that. I mean, it's what I initially thought. If you know about Sam Trabuco, you know that he's a fucking robotic trader. And if you like read all his tweets and the timing, he literally has told us when and what's going to happen when it's happening, or explained, like, you know, when the crash happened last year, why he had to crash the market. You know, he literally.
So you think he's going to continue?
It says here that he's having, you know, he's basically just fucking needs a break.
That's what I'm saying. I think
like he needs a break because he has the jitters. Like,
but I think physical, he has the jitters. But I think also he's collected enough capital through his trades and done whatever he needs that he doesn't have to work right now and go through and stress himself through this market. And I think there's a certain number of people like Saylor who felt the brunt of the market and had to move their positions and do things. And then there are other people who made their money in the bull market, who are just like, I'm tired of dealing with this right now. Let me just chill until I want to jump back in. That's my thought.
He made his money during the bull market to then quit during the bear market. That's not how that works.
I think he made his money both ways for this guy.
How does it work? He makes the market.
Yeah. How does it work, Mark?
As with any other profession that does trading, like, you're not going to quit just because, or you're not going to quit after you've made money just because it's a down market, right? Like you just said, he can make money in down markets also. And so ultimately the pressure around him, whether it been from shareholders or other people who gave him their money to trade.
I thought only experts know how to really, I thought it's kind of like a fool can make money in the bull market, and only really experienced traders actually make money in the bear market. Is that correct?
We're kind of seeing the opposite right now, though. We're seeing people who were the expert traders now saying, well, like Chris just said, this is too much for me right now. I've already made my money. Well, I've made my money, right? So I'm gonna step down. Michael Saylor, expert trader. He's like,
but that's the thing.
Just focus on this one area, actually.
But that's the thing. I don't think that Michael Saylor, I mean, he changed positions, but I don't think he's like removing himself from the process. I think that Sam Trabuco is kind of removing himself from the process right now. So it's a little different. I mean, there's a lot of.
It is interesting that people are quitting.
Why right now is the question.
Work on your own portfolio,
right?
Like, why work on their portfolio when they can work on, why work on the company's portfolio if I can make the same amount of money, if not more, working on my own?
It's less stress just doing trading my own account than trading someone else's account, right? That's ever managed someone else's money knows there is no stress like managing someone else's money. Right, Chris? Right. And so what I'm saying is these people were looking for the first initial out to no longer manage other people's money.
Right.
That tells you a lot right there.
Well, okay, but this is what it tells me. Like, and from my limited experience doing that, is that they were looking for an opportunity where it was safe to not do that. Because of the stress factor, right? I don't think it's necessarily like they all seem to be well off financially. They don't want the stress of having to deal with other people. And they're like, oh yeah, it's a bear market. It's down, everything's down. Well, I'm going to get out because I don't want to hear your bullshit. I don't want to have to answer your phone call.
We're saying the same thing, just kind of in different times. And what I'm saying is, if I didn't want to hear your bullshit, right? I didn't want to hear your bullshit when Bitcoin was actually 60,000.
Right. No, exactly. I didn't want to hear it then. Yeah.
I didn't want to hear that 40.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hear that 30 at all, actually.
Yeah.
And now we're at 20. I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of actually hearing your bullshit.
Yeah.
But
you can't walk away at 50 because it's almost impossible to walk away when everything's going up, because they're going to keep calling your phone like, oh, it's, what's the next play? It's going up. It's going crazy. I want to make 100 million. Versus when it's down, it's a lot easier to say, oh, it's down. Yeah, it's ugly. Yeah, maybe now is not the right time. And that's a lot easier kind of pass to take to extract yourself?
Just so we're clear, you said it's easier to take phone calls when their account is down as opposed to when their account
No,
is
I'm not. I'm not saying to take phone calls. It's easier to extract yourself from being client-facing, trading and engaging with people in that manner because they're less likely to want to pursue that type of activity when the market is down.
Because I'm going to say that probably couldn't be further from the truth.
So you're saying that
the lower people's accounts get, the more they want FaceTime with your ass. You saw the Big Short.
Right.
Michael Burry's clients wanted FaceTime with him because we're now down massive amounts. When they were up, no one cared.
Yeah, no one hits you up when you're up. That's for sure. The only people that hit you up
are FaceTime with you. Yeah. I need FaceTime. I need to see what's going on. I need answers. And you're like, man, fuck you and these answers. I've done nothing but good for you the last 6 months, 9 months, 6 years, whatever. Right,
Bernie? But if there's an audit, there's no audit when you're up a thousand. They don't want to see the paper.
Exactly. No one wanted to see Bernie at all, bro, for 9 years. When bro was up, winning, no one cared.
I don't care.
Mm-hmm. He went down. Oh, we need FaceTime. Mm-hmm. We need FaceTime. We need to see what's going on here.
So that's why everybody's quitting? Is that what we're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm asking, is it a coincidence that everyone's quitting right now? When
I mean, there are no coincidences, right? Yeah. Everything is mathematics and algorithms.
Sacred geometry. I saw a lot of that in Morocco.
Right.
It's crazy. Just follow the lines.
Word to FN Mecca. It's all about algorithms.
What? Nah. No. Nah, dude. I woke up to that. That's what I woke up to my first morning back in America was that shit.
Yeah,
that's amazing. That's the most.
I never listened to a snippet. I didn't even hear.
I didn't hear it. I woke up and saw it, and then I woke up, saw that, and then like 2 hours later at lunch, I saw that. Oh, he's already booted off of Capitol Records for saying the N word. If you don't know, everyone, FN Mecca is a new metaverse AI created virtual artist.
It's not AI created, and that's the biggest falsehood that. They're trying to sell people. There's nothing
that's even better.
There's
that's
nothing better. AI about it.
That's what I assume.
It's an actual person. Like, yeah, it's an actual person with an actual voice, with actual lyrics, with you know, just all of the
avatar.
Yeah, with all of these characteristics that they've generated. Nothing about it is AI. I don't understand what the
I think I've seen a headline with it saying AI as well.
Yeah, they're saying that what I'm telling you is that they're pitching it as an AI, but nothing, none of the it's an avatar. None of the characteristics are randomly generated. This is things that are created specifically that maybe they randomly generate a scenario or the Cybertruck with the Gucci print on it, but even that doesn't seem AI. Again, this is an actual human's voice that they use. These are actual lyrics that people wrote. There are two people behind the whole thing. So I don't know.
It makes 6ix9ine look a lot better than.
I mean, it looked like 6ix9ine and Lil Pump combined. But the thing about it is, like, I guess I could see that as being a more realistic, practical use of the quote-unquote metaverse than anything I've seen thus far. And that's the fucked up part about it is that it was like, damn, I could actually see how this is going to end up playing in the world. You know, like we started off with like Tupac hologram 2012, right? We're 10 years later and this is where we're at. 10 years from now, it's going to be something that, oh, it's like this, you know, Web3 character has the number one song on Billboard, like, whatever, like it's
Some people I saw someone I wish I would have it was signed as a spokesperson for a company, which I said someone, I should say something, which was not a real human being, just more of a generated personality avatar. But then I kind of feel like then brands don't have to really worry about people living their lives and staying in between the lines. But in this case, the quote unquote AI generated rapper didn't stay between the lines and lost their contract, their record deal. So
within like 24 hours. That was fire. That was the quickest contract round trip I've ever seen.
Yeah, grand opening, grand closing.
Yeah. So you know what's so crazy? This morning I found out about, you know, Biden canceling $10,000 of federal student loans. And I just got a breaking news from CBS Philadelphia that just sent me this breaking news, but I've known about this breaking news all day. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was just very interesting how, you know, the news be behind y'all.
Yeah, Chris, you're laughing, but that actually just wiped out about 85% of my debt and all of my college. Like literally, I owed $21,000, and it was a lot of it was
congratulations
from Pell Grants. So it's like people laughing. Oh, what is that doing? Blah, blah,
blah. Like, that
shit directly affected me in a most important way because I've been walking around with that debt since 2009. And
you know what the best part was? You could have walked around it to 2099.
No, bro, but that shit is affecting my credit score, my nigga.
Of course, but that
and my ability to purchase things and get credit cards and all of this shit. You know what I'm saying? And it's bullshit. Those bullshit charges in the first place. Like I should have never had to take out loans. I had a.
That's the thing that I laugh about. The fact that they make you take out a loan and then they say, you know what, we're cutting off some of your loan.
But let me give you the story, bro. Like they. Apparently, I had a full ride scholarship to LMU coming out of Verbum Dei, getting straight A's, going to from a Jesuit high school to a Jesuit college. Okay. They gave me $24,000 a year in scholarship money, but the tuition was $40,000 a year. So my grandparents helped pay some, and then the rest was a loan every year. And that loan with interest, after I've been paying down $1,000 here, $1,000 there, is $20,000 11 years later for some money that they should have covered in the first place when you're giving somebody a quote unquote full scholarship. You know what I'm saying? So this is the game that the system plays and that they put you in. And yeah, like they should have wiped this out a long time ago. Like I should have never incurred these costs as an 18-year-old college student. Like they wouldn't give me a loan to get a fucking car or anything important.
Exactly. You know?
And so the part of this issue that I agree with people on is that no, this does not solve the problem. This solves my specific problem, and that's why I love this. But I also understand like this does not solve the systemic issue of still giving 18-year-olds $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt from these colleges who are overcharging for this education that isn't really worth what they're charging you in the first place. Mm-hmm. So they put a band-aid over a bullet wound. You know, they need to solve the systemic issue for the incoming freshmen who are going to incur debt because they're not being absolved of any of this.
Spending $60,000 a year.
Wait, you see how much we spend on the fucking military shit this last year, right?
Yeah, no, bro, we're always going to spend an exorbitant amount on our defense budget. That's the only way America knows how to stay safe is to spend on defense. And it's not even
solving.
Exactly, right? Because it's more about that. Yeah, but I mean, it's in order to have weapons contracts and, you know, wield their fucking power around the world through their defense budget. So, yeah, you know, the country's got loads of issues, you know, loads of shit. I'm just glad that they were able to accomplish this one thing for
something.
Yeah, for our generation, you know, and that's really who this is targeting is people like me in our generation who are late 20s, late 30s, early 40s, who went to college and are in the workforce, who make less than $125,000 a year, who are saddled with this debt, who want to buy a home, who are trying to save to buy a home, who, are, you know what I'm saying, want a piece of the fucking American pie and couldn't get out of this fucking interest, like, the shit was.
That's the thing.
Compounding interest. What kind of fucked up shit is that? You give a kid a loan with compounded interest.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is that?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about.
So I feel you.
So yeah, that was my gripe and my bit my moment of zen today is that they, the fucking government, because I don't want to attribute it to the fucking president, the government did something good for once that actually positively affected my life. You know what I'm
saying?
Can't
give, like, Biden one last win before he croaks? Come on.
I mean, yeah, good on him that he was there standing there when the thing happened. But I don't like to give too much credit to presidents for doing shit. Like,
yeah, no, facts.
Whatever.
I'm glad that's off.
I was going to say, as someone that's talked to, like, multiple people about their finance over the last 15 years, skills, I don't know anyone that has that low amount except you. You're probably one out of three people I've ever met that have probably less than $50,000.
No, you're right, bro. And that's because I'm lucky enough to have my grandparents, you know what I'm saying? And shout out to them for coming through it and paying what they did to help me have that low of an amount, you know what I'm saying? Because it should be much larger than that. And I got lucky enough to have a scholarship that covered a lot of my costs to go to a private college, you know what I'm saying, and do all this shit. But yeah, the average person who went to undergrad, like Mike is saying, it's 50 at the low end. If they, if somebody got a master's, it's 120, you know what I'm saying, and up. So yeah, like,
and it's continuing to go up because colleges is becoming even more expensive. Education is becoming decentralized, but people are still in the same mindset of going to school when you can go to basically YouTube University or Udemy and learn the same things and make more money. But like $70,000 for a year of college is insane, and people are not making enough money to recruit that, to pay that off for many, many years. So yeah, it's a problem for sure.
It's definitely a trap.
Hey, I saw a tweet today that said, well, looks like college tuition just rose another $10,000.
Yeah, I saw that tweet as well. I mean, there's a lot of cynical, like, people in regards to the to this thing. I try not to pay that too much mind. Like, I understand the sentiment behind it, but
hey, how are they going to pay for that?
No, they're going to
If
you ever get a chance and you want a good laugh, don't look at the inflation calculator on the U.S. dollar. Look at the inflation calculator on U.S. tuitions.
Bro, just to give you the reality of how fucked I knew we were when I was in college, the tuition rose at LMU and at USC at the same time. It rose 10%. Every single year that I was there. And that means it rose 10% every single year since I have left. And 10% then was $4,000. So it was 34 or 5 when I started. It was about 44 when I left or some shit like that. So yeah, $60,000 a year to go to these schools now. And it's only going to continue to increase $4,000, $5,000 every single year, which is insane, you know? But that just lets you know how many people have an obscene amount of wealth in this country. And then also the people that they want to trap in this country with the idea that if you work hard, you can have wealth. No, if you work hard, you can have debt and be another part of the middle class. And that's what college scam is all about.
Well, look, on a lighter note, free my man Alexei Pertsev.
Who's that? The
developer of Tornado Cash. Oh,
yeah, free homie. No, to be honest, free that. Free guy. Alexei. Yeah, that's fucked up.
His wife reported that they went and snatched him up in the middle of the night on some rendition shit.
That's fire, though, that they do that.
That's a precedent. I mean, but it sets a precedent, man, that's actually very dangerous in this space where, you know, you now know that
they're coming.
You're coming. If you make something that's disruptive enough, they will
get you. They'll put a black bag over your head.
But who is that? Who did you get arrested by? Is this a U.S. Arrest?
This is the U.S. government that arrested him, yeah.
I thought it was FBI. Let's be specific.
Right.
And it's not him who did all the laundering. It's everyone else. But he's the one to get locked up. That shit sucks.
He just wrote a code. I don't know that he was laundering. I thought he was getting arrested just from creating the mixer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, tell the story.
No, the question is, should people who create technology be punished for what people use it for?
No.
Right? Because you can use Tornado Cash.
No.
Yeah.
If that's the case, that's a slippery slope.
Yeah. You didn't make Zyklon B to kill a bunch of people, but, you know, Hitler used it. Does the guy who made Zyklon B or made whoever made mustard gas going to end up going to jail? Like, I think it depends on what you make in general. Like, I feel like you're producing drugs and the drugs are killing people, so then you probably are at fault for that. I think making a code or something is a little bit different.
I think it's kind of the same principle, honestly.
Man, I was going to say, so Pfizer...
Right, yeah, like it's a drug. You could take a little bit of it and be fine. You could take a little bit more and be great. You could take a little bit more and be dead. So yeah. It's like,
but if you're writing a code, I don't know.
It's the same principle. You could use a lot of things for good. You know what I'm saying?
So the guy who made drones should probably go to jail. The guy who made the first drone.
Should we hang the nigga that made chat rooms in the town square?
That's what I'm saying. No, I agree.
Because all of the predators
fucked up. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where you're going with it.
So no, I'm saying that I don't think he should be arrested. I think. Oh,
you don't think he should?
No, it's just confusing on like what's like okay or not, because it's right. Not your intention. Like, and even if it is, I think it's like what you make. Like making a program like that is different than making a weapon, like creating weapons or creating substances that kill people. And most of those people never go to jail. But the guy who makes a program that America doesn't like because some other people used it in ways America doesn't like and the IRS doesn't like is going to jail.
Right.
That's where it gets funny.
Right.
And, you know, that's the slippery slope.
So it says Alexei is not. It says he's not an employee of the company, but a developer who contributed code to a decentralized protocol, and right? So
explain to them what Tornado does.
Founder, he just was a coder.
Can you explain to us what Tornado does?
Just give me one more second. Mm-hmm. It says the Netherlands Financial Advanced Cyber Team, part of the country's Fiscal Information and Investigation Service, began investigating Tornado Cash in June. And it also says that he was apprehended last Wednesday in the Amsterdam city center, 2 days after the United States issued sanctions against Tornado Cash. It goes on to talk about the founders, and I will look for exactly how they explain what Tornado Cash does. But I know it's a mixer.
Yeah, so it just, you know, mixes up a bunch of Ethereum that someone wants to send to anonymous wallets, which is great for laundering, you know, and also great for privacy. But there's always something with privacy, like remember Fluffy Pony? I forgot his actual real name, the guy who created Monero, he's a founder on Monero, who got arrested by the US government about a year ago.
So how much money were they laundering on Tornado Cash?
I don't know.
They don't say, and because they're not really getting the people who were laundering the money.
All right. It was block their addresses, right?
I'm sure they're researching them. And I'm sure this is part of a larger effort where more of the information will come out. But it's saying that... you know, like it's not even talking about that part. It's just talking about how they arrested him as a part of, like, basically, it seemed like they've been doing research. And as soon as, you know, the US put out their sanctions officially, it gave the authorities in Amsterdam all that they needed to move forward. And all it says, I see here, it quickly, it says the sanctioning of cryptocurrency mixer Tornado Cash. I don't see a full explanation of it if someone wanted to pull it up.
Yeah. I, you know, a quick TLDR is, yeah, Tornado Cash is a protocol on Ethereum that makes it so you can mix up scramble up a bunch of Ethereum, make it kind of untraceable, although you can see it comes from Tornado Cash when it goes into a new anonymous wallet that only you will have. And it, you know, helps people kind of hide their identity. It's used a lot for, a lot of developers use it. A lot of big traders use it so people don't follow them, or it keeps their stuff private. It's, you know, it's not such a nefarious thing, but a lot of nefarious people do use it. I know there's like a lot of addresses coming from North Korea and Colombia, which indicate, you know, indicated things like espionage and drug trade cartels using this shit. But also, yeah, just a lot of art collectors use it. Yeah, no, it's for, like, it was
that's
like
a
proven.
A lot of assumptions right
it's
there.
Not but assumptions. Do we, yeah. It's like a bunch of hackers from North know? Korea using it.
This guy is defending.
Where is he getting his list from?
Wait.
From the chain. But I'm just saying, if people know how to use VPNs, how do we know that it's really coming from North Korea and that's not a setup?
Exactly. I feel yeah. you 100%.
If you ever use a VPN, you know that. Like, you yeah. can set your location to anywhere.
Literally anywhere. I don't know. I don't understand how they track people or how they think they're tracking people.
Because they can look through your VPN. The VPN is only good for your actual service provider, not for the government.
Okay.
Service providers you can trick, but in the end, the government can still trace you pinging your address off of something else.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum-sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with the plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
So I guess part of it. Like, and plus on the chain stuff, like there's onloading and offloading. So it's obvious when you're going to offload and onload and the trends of certain hackers, and they can tell which hacker group did what. So then the addresses might be different. But no matter what, the activity is coming from Singapore, where the hub of this that North Korean group is that hacked Sony. Like, literally, the guys who hacked Sony were using that shit. They hacked my shit. They leaked my information when I was at Sony using it. And then I know, like, my friends have used it. A bunch of my friends have used it. Like, it's just an app. It's just a tool. And again, yeah, how you use a tool, you know, matters. Right. But I don't think it's fair to, like, they've blacklisted addresses that have used it, you know, which are project addresses and some bad people. Right. Like,
people are getting losing their jobs, and they are also distancing themselves if they see that you've used Tornado Cash for sure as well. Yeah. So there's like a lot of backlash just with regular people who have used it.
Well, and researching projects, like a lot of back in the day, if you notice a contract was supplied with ETH from a Tornado Cash wallet or whatever
address,
then you would like be a little bit adverse to being to that project unless you have some confirmation.
Right,
it's super common for the devs from Aave or whoever to use it to, you know, scramble their stuff so they're safe.
Well,
kind of sucks.
Speaking of laundering money, did you guys see this? And back to our NFT corner, which we haven't crawled in.
Let's go today. Whales of Ether.
Did you guys see this Pudgy Penguin
purchase? Resurgence.
I
mean, it's been happening for like a month or two.
Did you see the specific purchase of the 400 ETH for the Pudgy Penguin?
That happened again today.
Okay. No, not today. It happened last week, I think.
Yeah, no. So that's this, but like the last one was like what 300? That was like back in the heyday.
I guess I don't know. I didn't follow.
That's like the highest one now, but ETH is cheaper, so technically it's not the highest amount in dollar amount.
Right.
But yeah. That is the highest ETH amount yet.
Right.
Which one was it?
It was just like a regular penguin, but I guess it was facing the opposite way of.
Oh yeah, that's a rare one. That's a rare penguin.
Yeah, it's a rare.
That's a rare.
It was equal 650,000.
Mike got up.
You what?
And when we started talking about NFTs, he sat back down. He heard us talk about penguins. He got back up.
That's okay, Mike. I would get up, but this robe. I would have ran out the window, but this robe is a little small. It's hard to run.
Again.
But to me, that kind of feels planned. Does it not feel planned? Like you know, someone in the back room was like, "Yo, we got to get this project popping again. You mind buying this Pudgy Penguin, this rare, to get it back going?"
I don't know. I don't know.
They've been popping back again. They've had their they got through their weird little, you know, changing of the guard, and it feels like it's been just on a good upward trajectory. Pretty healthy too for like the last month and a half. It hasn't been like some crazy random project that pops up, but it is weird how everything has happened with Pudgy Penguins.
Well, like, I felt like Cole,
the dude, the old founder got booted, and there was like a big takeover or people trying to take it over. There was weird drama, weird vibes,
a hostile takeover because they were young.
Yeah.
The people who created it were very young and they didn't really know how to run a business, basically. Okay. So their investors got together and kind of said, like, we want new leadership.
Okay.
And so, but I'm really excited about this because we've seen a lot of projects die, but we haven't seen projects come back to life, right?
Right.
So this kind of is going to create some more excitement because there's definitely projects that I'm still holding on to. And I have just felt like they were dead to the world. And so now that gives me some hope.
Yeah,
me too. Love that good old hopium, y'all.
Yeah, hopium is nice.
Hey, roll it up. Roll it up.
I don't know. You know, I've been charting these NFT projects. I've been, you know, following like five or six. I'm starting to add Pudgy Penguins to my list. The only thing is that I would never buy a Pudgy Penguin, but I'm kind of interested in it enough now.
I would never buy shit. Shut up.
You got me there.
And then 1 year when we have Pudgy Penguins and they're all at 28, don't fucking talk to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Mike's going to have one too. He's going
to
buy it back.
Yo, don't worry. They're not going at 28. Yeah, unfortunately for us.
Right. Is that what Eats at this price? Maybe when it goes to 200?
Yeah. Well, I've been looking. You know, Azuki was at six or close to six ETH floor. Clone X has dropped significantly, and it's at, you know, in the sevens now, I think, in the high sevens. It was, you know, the eight was like scary, and then it dropped. So and you know, I look, Cool Cats is kind of my target project. You know, I've looked at that in the last 2 weeks. You know, they had a collab with the Hundreds, shout out to Bobby, collab with the Bomb Squad. So, you know, I love that they're connecting with people I associate with and people I love and brands that I care about. But they had a little spike and then, you know, went back down. They were at 2.5 and then flat two.
And I think so, the market with all these prices is one thing. I'm not like, you know, market went up.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, this is, no, of course, but ETH is now back down. ETH is now back down to 16 something or maybe 1560, something like that.
I would say we were ranging.
Actually. Yeah, we're ranging between 1560 and 1650. With that being said, I saw this clip. I guess one of the Ape founders, we haven't talked about Ape in a while. One of the Ape founders, did you guys see this clip that he said he doesn't talk about the, he doesn't think about the floor price?
No, he only thinks about, yeah, he only thinks about fucking dealing with Polly right now, probably.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about that notion? Do you think that's cap? That somebody,
that's cap.
Yeah,
that's cap.
I thought that was the biggest cap ever. Like, come on, bro, you don't think about the floor price of your project? Like, everybody thinks about the, that's like saying I don't think about the stock price of fucking whatever company you own. Like, yeah, you don't think about it, but I'm sure you're aware of what it is every single day.
Yeah, so you're saying when
does he work for the project?
I guess he's one of the founders.
Yeah, you're not, because in, you know, I guess in NFT corporate culture, I mean, I don't know what the term to call it. You're supposed to push onto all the employees that, like, we don't care about the floor price. No one talks about the floor price. We're here for the long term and we're building something amazing. So yeah, that's what they say to the other employees that work with them.
Right.
So
we don't talk about Flight Club. I get it. But it's like, yeah, no, I understand that's the party line that you have to push. But it's just interesting to even see that and to know that this is getting into that kind of corporate speak realm. And it, to me, it seemed a little bit more fun and truthful, even if it was to a detriment previously, to where people were like, you know, you could see the fear in people when prices drop and all this. And now it's just like getting into that corporate land. So I just thought it was interesting that he made that comment. But yeah, I don't know, you know, I never know where the NFT market is going, but I do love to watch it.
Hey, I was going to say, in your previous comment also, for me, it was like, you know, kind of more indicative also of NFTs going more corporate.
Yeah.
By saying that, you know, the Pudgy Penguins needed a change of leadership or change of, like their C-suite guys are being rotated out. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. For a bunch of cartoon penguins. Nah, you love the Pudgy. Don't you do that?
Like crayon art kindergarten shit. Are we serious?
Don't you do that, Michael.
So yeah, because from my understanding, they were in, some of the people that founded that project were in high
school.
Yeah,
so
we're losing.
Now they got three people invested in their project and they're like,
oh, Crypto Bay.
Audio,
yeah, we lost you on the audio.
We got you now.
Oh, I was saying that from my understanding, some of the founders were in high school.
Yeah.
They did an amazing job marketing and they brought in a lot of people with some money. And then that's when the people with the money were like, hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up.
Hey, man. invest in the future, right? It's like that's what Jason loves to tout. Them kids are gonna make us money.
I mean, isn't that who did M'Lady's? Your favorite project?
It's not my favorite project. It's just it was a good project. It just got hurt. Right? Yeah. I mean, I do think there's a lot of that people don't realize. There's a lot of 16-year-old devs, which is literally a meme / the handle of one of the devs of a project. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. The guys who made Rari Capital, the dev who made that, was 16 years old. And that was the whole thing. They destroyed him. And of course, when the thing got hacked, he, you know, got the brunt of it for being a young kid. But he made a full DeFi loaning protocol. And it worked perfectly for like almost a year before anyone realized who did it and there's any mishaps. So that's interesting. It's funny because like the older you get, the less experimental, the less risky you become. And I feel like it's like people want that risk when it's going out, but then when things are bad or things get weird or vibes are not the same, they start blaming they get afraid of risk. Like even with our parents telling them what to do with this shit and how to buy it. And, you know, 2 years later, now they're like, oh, well, what should I do now? That was down. But the whole time it was up, they were asking us all this shit and they still didn't want to do it.
Right. Well, speaking of risky projects, let's talk about Mike's favorite guy.
Oh,
Richard Hart. The Hexonians. Pulse Bag Loading.
Hey man, Richard Hart's gonna beat you up. I'm not gonna lie. He's gonna.
I thought they were Hexicans.
Yeah, Hexicans. Hexicans. Yeah. What did I call them?
I don't know.
But yeah, yeah, man.
Hexicans.
Oh yeah. What's going on?
What's Hex at right now? Why do you keep coming at Mike?
Why do we have a Hex? It's not even about Hex. It's about this guy at this point now, who continues to market himself, is now making the rounds of even YouTube. He was on Wolf of Wall Street's podcast.
Oh yeah, he was on the Fresh and Fit, right?
He was on Fresh and Fit. He then was on Valuetainment, SOS. That show is about, like, that's probably one of the more, I would probably say, more legitimate YouTube channels or YouTube spaces now is the Valuetainment. They're doing really good work. But yeah, man, I mean, listen, I don't feel scammed, is what I will say.
Yeah.
This nigga's doing all this promo, all this TV shit.
Yeah, he ain't playing.
Scammed.
Yeah.
And also, honestly, it's at a perfect spot. It is at a perfect spot, Mike, when you showed that chart the other day. I'm looking at it again right now. Yeah. I don't know. I think you might want to shut up and buy. Like, yo, look at it. It looks like the exact beginning of what it did before.
Chris, you're doing something dangerous right now.
I'm looking at charts.
What?
Mid-pod, he's offering financial information.
Right.
Oh, shit, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
financial information I offer is to buy wells of Ether now before fucking Ethereum goes up to 10,000 and you fucking feel stupid.
Hey, I have a question, though, for Crypto Bay, Jay, right here. I'm not sure if you saw, but Tiffany sells out of 250 NFTs. Have you seen the Tiffany NFTs? So basically, how many of those do you plan on are you expecting on receiving for Christmas this year from your crypto bands?
You know, the wearable NFT community is very, very hot, guys. Fashion is all the rage. And it's really because it comes with the utility of possibly getting an actual bracelet and also being invited to like exclusive in-store pop champagne, you know, events. And so, you know, I have a Gucci NFT. And that's in partnership with this project called 10KFT. And I got invited to a Gucci event during NFT NYC. And I have to say that it was really, really nice. We got gift bags when we left. I got a Gucci laptop case thing. So, you know, that's only to be expected with actual Tiffany, a company that is a jewelry brand. It may be, you know, that you might get a charm. I don't think everyone's going to get Tiffany bracelets, but they're going to get something. And depending on how long and how many NFTs that they earn, if they become like, you know, an OG in this space or a whale in this space, I'm sure Tiffany's going to make sure that those people are happy. So I don't think it's actually a bad buy, because you have something that's valuable in real life. And, you know, and if it's valuable in real life as well.
Yeah, I think I saw Kith do this, because Kith had some NFTs that were also connected to clothing and some other items. So I think this might be the future of NFTs, or the immediate future of what, you know, a lot of brands have planned for their NFT releases. I think, the gaming companies, I've seen like some stuff around 2K with NFTs. I think the larger companies are starting their rollouts of how they're going to market NFTs and integrate NFTs into their branding, into the future of their businesses. So yeah, it's interesting. The Tiffany.
It's like, why not? If people.
Go ahead.
If people that actually have money, or, you know, some extra money that are already active in the crypto space, you might as well target those people as well. Right. It's probably not their Tiffany, their original Tiffany customer. Right. So it's kind of a way for them to expand to new.
No, definitely. Yeah.
I know if I had a punk, I would get that thing, but you know, I thought we canceled Tiffany because they made those collars. So I don't know.
Man, again, black people don't cancel anything. I don't know how many times I have to say it. Black people don't.
They don't.
No, we don't. What have black people ever canceled? Again, just give me one example.
That's true. I still bought Gucci right after.
Right, like we don't.
Then they cancel that guy, the nappy headed hose guy.
Oh, Don Imus. Hey, that shit was hilarious though.
Yo, don't do that.
What do you mean? It was funny.
Just the way he said it.
Yeah, it was fucking funny.
I think his girlfriend taught him that. That's the best part about it. It's like he
is way out of pocket.
He actually made Don Imus like $200 million.
And that's the thing. Here's the thing. We didn't cancel Don Imus because we never listened to Don Imus.
Exactly.
White people decided on behalf of black people that they did not want Don Imus. That's the whole thing, is that white people are the ones who are doing the canceling. Black people. We don't.
But it backfired because, again, he then got a bag.
Exactly.
Man, one of the things that came out during, you know, this whole Alex Jones trial that I've been following also was that his financials.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that?
He's worth like $150, $200 million.
Bro, it said he was making $800,000 a day.
You and I both know when he was on YouTube,
yeah,
bro wasn't worth probably $1 million.
Right.
Think about that.
Yeah.
He then got canceled and now is worth $250.
And ran his bag up.
Man, cancel me all day long. Yeah. Man.
Please come in.
What you mean? That's why, hey, my boy fucking Andrew Tate about to get.
Hey, he's about to get the bag on top of the bag. You know,
on top.
Like, whatever it is, you know,
shit was stupid.
Right,
I'm not dumb.
Yeah, them banning him is dumb for sure.
It's going to only make him more valid to the.
But that also just shows how stupid that our country is, that we have a bunch of kids believing that this fool knows exactly the answers and how to make them successful.
But that shit doesn't even matter. Like,
it doesn't. It doesn't. Like, but I understand that's the thing. Like, those words. Like, we should know better. Most people know better, but there's still a lot of stupid ass people who do copycat shootings and do copycat shit.
But he ain't telling nobody to go shoot nobody.
I know. He's just definitely dumb. But it's a private, also a private app. It's a private company. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, that's the thing. They can do what they want.
Bro, Sean Connery was on Barbara Walters talking about slapping women open-handed. You feel me? Like in the 80s.
John Connery's in movies slapping women.
Right. Yeah. Like, bro, this is
private company.
This is all some new wave shit that they're trying to do, but it's
dumb. I definitely don't agree with it. I think you need to have those thoughts out so you can exactly weed out the people that you don't want in your life and understand like what's going on in the world.
I don't think
it's a private company.
I don't think you need him, but I don't think there's a necessity to ban.
Just shut him up.
Just yeah. He's a regular person. Like he's just a regular.
No, he's not a regular, bro. That's a weird. That fool is.
No, I'm just saying, bro. He's not the fucking president. The prime minister. He's
or
not
a terrorist. Or he's not. Yeah.
He's not controlling the fucking GDP of no nothing, bro. He's a private citizen. You know what I'm saying? Like talking shit.
It's
like,
a slippery slope, man. You know what I mean? And I'm telling you, like, if you're okay with that, then you're also okay with them banning Farrakhan or banning
whoever.
You know, smart, intelligent leader that
I'm not okay with them banning people. I just know that it's their private thing. If it was a publicly, if it's a government owned or publicly owned thing, it might be a different question.
So what you're saying, according to other countries, they should just take it and then now make it then now state owned.
I'm just saying
Twitter state owned.
You know, Facebook, you say if you say something that's bad or you do something that hurts people, you get reported, and then after enough reports, you get banned. And so I think it's just
It's a slippery slope for sure. Because what people determine and deem bad is in the eye of the beholder for the most part.
Of course.
Again, if it's not you saying people should be raped or assaulted or murdered.
Okay, but then now that's the slippery slope you're talking about now. Like again,
No. I'm just saying, like, if you're not advocating for violence, like that's not a slippery slope. That's
I mean, he did say to slap women around sometimes.
Again, like
Chris, did he say that?
He says sometimes you gotta slap
wearing
a bitch.
His feminist panties today for sure.
I'm not even wearing panties or underwear, bro. Look what I got on right now, bro.
Regardless
back in the motherland, bro. We don't wear underwear
or not. This is the point of living here. Is we should be able to disagree with each other and then be able to effectively articulate our points to where someone could say, I can see why that could be so, or I can see why that could not be so. But when we remove that option, it then creates terrible shit historically.
Well, the truth of the matter is that all these things exist. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing with the war on drugs. Like when you act like, oh, we're going to magically stop everybody from doing drugs, you're only going to make people do drugs underneath the bridge while they're getting on the 405. Like, nobody's stopping doing drugs. You're not going to stop this nigga from having these conversations and making videos and sharing his views. Like, he's just going to have these conversations in private. Same shit with racism. So it's like, it's best to have most shit out in the open so people can deal with it in the open and address it as such. When you hide shit, that's when, you know what I'm saying? Everything done in the dark comes to the light. We know that. So, yeah, I think we've covered a lot of topics. Let's get to the memes of the week. I think Crypto Base and the meme.
That's so cool.
I did.
My friend just sent me an article about Suzu and.
Are we creating a new group?
Yeah, we need a new group chat because when Chris got hacked. His hacker removed us all from the group chat because
and Michael blocked me.
Yeah, rightfully so. Good job, Mike.
I was trying to get me to send me his wallet so I could get funky.
Right. Yeah, but if you would like to, you can still send $100 to
to your .eth address. So Crypto Bay J's meme was Patrick from SpongeBob and the police. Fish and the meme is when they catch the person that's been losing all my money and Patrick's in handcuffs. He's like, I'm the last person I would have suspected, but it was me all the time. Yeah, no, for sure. That's definitely it's me when I'm trading. who's been losing all these stop losses?
It was me who took them off.
Yeah.
It's me who bought back in.
It's me. me who's been trading sideways all week, not the market. I had the one where, I don't know if you guys have seen this picture of Ryan Gosling walking next to Steve Carell. It's like the IT guy and the sales guy. There's a bunch of different versions of the meme, but it's...
I see it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we do need to start a new group chat. So I'll do that when we get out of the...
Did anyone see the Squarespace commercial with Kendrick?
No. No. Oh, was that Squarespace? No, that was Cash App, right? That was Cash App.
My
fault. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was Kendrick a dope-ass
commercial. Xavier TV.
Yeah, and Ray Dalio.
And Ray Dalio, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great commercial. Shout out to PG Lang. Shout out to Kendrick, Dave Free, Xavier, and Ray. Yeah, and Cash App. That was a great little piece right there on gambling and saving and compounding your money and making good decisions. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Cash App, which should sponsor us.
Yeah, we should definitely get Cash App to sponsor us.
Or Square.
Or Square.
Or both.
Yeah, at this definitely. Point.
You know,
Square.
Again, make your investments in the bear market. It's the best time.
Right. We'll take a lot of people. Rock Nation,
Tornado Cash,
Twitter. You know.
Penguins.
I don't think Tornado Cash has
Warner Brothers Discovery.
Money. It's frozen. I guess it shouldn't.
It's frozen like your screen right now, Crypto Bay. We got to get you some T1 internet connections.
I need that shit too. Right now, I'm just using my crystals to focus my Wi-Fi in the perfect position to my computer. I got this fossil.
There you go.
From Morocco. It looks like hash. It's not hash. It's just a fossil.
Right. Well, yeah, man. Well, that's...
Our apartment building has trash Wi-Fi.
It does. It truly does.
Well, we'll get it figured out and start recording live eventually. But for now, we'll work on our Wi-Fi situations and upgrade our audio capabilities as we move forward through these trying times in the bear market. Hopefully next week we'll be back in a bull swing. So for the crypto bros, my co-host Mike McGoy, Crypto Bay J, Chris Epps, I'm Jason Madison. Until next week, we out of here.
Peace.